Welcome to episode 27 of Go Mountain Goats. My name is Finlay Wild. We're having some incredible spring weather at the moment. And in the words of my friend BB, lots of people are unleashing themselves everywhere onto cool mountain missions. Now, have you ever looked at a GPS trace and you see it online and you can't really tell what it is or where it's going or anything unless you zoom out, and you have to zoom out a long way to see what's happening. But the opposite of that, I guess, is these epic massive runs where you see the trace and you immediately know where it is, because in the case that we're just going to talk about, it's basically running the whole of the west coast of Scotland north from Fort William. I find those traces really inspiring because of course the runs are incredible. And yeah, I'm delighted today to be talking to Pavel Cymbalista. Welcome, Pavel.
Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great to chat. We're mainly, of course, going to talk about your really recent, incredible Cape Wrath Trail record, which is unsupported, breaking the overall record, which is now, your record is 3 days, 14 hours, 49 minutes and 19 seconds.
It is crazy. It's a crazy time.
Maybe I could just start and get you to introduce yourself. Sort of, where do you live and what's your day-to-day life?
Mm-hmm. So my name is Pavel Cymbalista and I live in Malig. I work for Movi Fish Farming. I work in Malig in the harvest station. Just day-to-day, I'm quite lucky because I work 7 days and I'm off for 7 days, so I can actually arrange my time off a little bit about running and family life. I have two girls and happily married to my wife Ashley. My children, Maya is 11 and Freya is 4, so they keep us busy. We have lots of animals in the house as well, so that keep us busy every day, like guinea pigs, dogs, chickens, and other animals that my children like to have. It's like a mini zoo in our house. So it's non-stop outdoors with the animals.
And you're also a coach.
And I'm a coach, yeah. I recently decided to start up a wee coaching business, so trying to get some people on board and showing them my way of training. There's different ways. And so I got quite a few people interested in my training. So it's nice actually to see that people see potential. Like actually I can pass on the knowledge I have.
Well, you've done a lot, as we're gonna get on to. how are you feeling now? I mean, how long are we since about 2 weeks since you finished?
9 days.
All right, okay.
Ten days from today. I finished on Saturday evening. Just before 11 in the evening I finished. Yeah, I feel not bad. Everything went fine, but I had a small hiccup at the end, unexpected. I got cellulitis in my right foot, possibly contracted. I got it during the run from all the blisters and cuts and running through bogs. So I didn't know until a day after I came back home. I had to go back to the hospital and they kept me on antibiotics just to get it sorted.
It was
painful. That was actually the actual cellulitis was more painful than the anything else.
Well, let's come back to that at the end when we've talked about the trail. You've had treatment and you're recovering.
I'm recovering well. Yeah, it's great. All back.
And I suppose the first thing probably is to define what is the Cape Wrath Trail.
Cape Wrath Trail. So it is 376 kilometers, 230 miles trail from Fort William to Cape Wrath up northwest coast of Scotland to the lighthouse. You can complete it north-south or south to north. I completed from Fort William taking the ferry across to Kamisnagol, I think it is.
Okay.
And just following one of the many trails, routes you can take. Because Cape Wrath is basically lots of different trails up north to the lighthouse. It's just a kind of, it's a journey through the, back in the day when people got, how do you call it, taken away from the land, there's a word for that.
Clearances.
Clearances.
Yeah.
It is a journey through actually through the history when you you can see all the settlements, and I saw them, and it was really, it felt really sad. Like you could see, you could tell people used to live here. You can see the lazy fields everywhere, all the houses, the boffies, they're amazing buildings. Some of them look like church size buildings, are boffies now, and there's no one about. It's completely no one. I saw maybe two people in 3.5 days. So I felt really lonely.
Including walkers and walkers. Runners and everything. Okay.
Yeah. There was no one running. There was two walkers.
Wow.
I'm not counting through the villages when I walked through the village, because that doesn't. Yeah, but on the trails, on the hills, there was no one.
And yeah, that's the sad aspect, I suppose, of the wildness of the hills.
You feel really lonely.
The fact that, you go past a ruin, and of course that would have been, families in these really remote places. And nowadays we think, how did they live there?
Yeah.
It's so remote.
Yeah. They used to live there happily. And
some of these places, were thriving, weren't they? Like, like Barrisdale up at the north.
That area looks, it's really amazing. And there's like hardly anyone living there now.
Yeah. So it felt like a real journey through these places.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And was that something that you sort of thought, was that a reason to do it initially, or was that something
It was part of it. I really wanted to see the history of the clearances, because at the Fort William Mountain Festival, there was a man talking about the clearances, and he wrote a book about the Cape Wrath, hiking it in a few weeks' time took him. And he wrote a book about the clearances and about the people that live there. And it was actually really inspiring to go and see what he experienced, like a bit faster. But I just wanted to test myself, see if I can do it. I usually run, I think the longest one was the West Highland Way. That was 95 miles. That's the furthest I ran. So I doubled it. This
plus
time, plus extra miles, plus a lot of height. It was a big test of character, and it was in the I was running for Harbour Hope, and in the name of my dad, who sadly passed away before Christmas last year. So it was extra motivation. So I found lots of motivation to do this, so it kept me going.
And I think, am I right? You have for a lot of your big runs, you have done it for another cause, to raise money.
Yes, I was trying to, if it was a big run, I was always trying to make a wee charity, to organize a charity. Like I was, from the Ben Nevis 24 Hours I was running, 7 times up and down Ben Nevis. So I did it for Davy Duncan.
Okay.
When he had his, he was unwell with COVID. So that was to help him a little bit.
A local runner.
And another one was the West Highland Way, that was raising some money to buy a unit for the eco shop in Malek. We are starting trying to open up a eco shop, the Malek Hub. It'll be like connecting people together, and in one building, the old Spar building in Malek, will be like it'll be a Malek Hub.
Okay.
It'll be just community hub. It'll be gathering everyone together, all the communities from the islands, Noidart, Egg, Ram, in from Sky, just to have a one sort of like
a place to
just get together for the community, a wee shop as well, organizing there. So I managed to do a fundraiser for that, and recently for La Haber Hope with the Cape Wrath.
Yeah. And just, we've sort I was definitely going to ask you to talk about your other records and challenges, and you've definitely given us a quick name check of some of them. But to go into a bit more detail, that Ben Nevis 24-hour challenge was last year, wasn't it?
Two years ago.
That was okay.
2 years ago, in 2021.
So this was how many times you could go?
Seven times. Yeah. See, I did. It was 24 hours, and the record was six.
Okay.
And I found out it stood there for 15 years, so I was like, "Oh, maybe I can take it to 7 or 8." I was aiming for 8, but
okay,
just the weather was at night was really hard. Just the cloud was sitting really low, and you couldn't see past like 2 meters ahead of you. So I was tired, and I was getting lost on the actual Ben Nevis path.
Okay.
So it slowed me down just to keep on track, but I managed to get seven. Seven up and down was 21 hours, 42 minutes.
Okay.
Something like that. I still had spare time, but it was not enough to go up and down. The up and down fully counts as one,
fully.
So
okay.
Just,
I'm trying to think off the top of my head how much ascent that is, but...
That was over 10,000 meters.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the West Island Way, so that was an unsupported record you got.
Yeah, I was looking at the times. I was like, oh, God, I don't know if I can do it, because people do it all the time, you know, try to break the records for those known paths. And I was just looking at the actual times. I was like, I think I can take an hour or two of that.
Cool.
It was just under 24 hours for an unsupported attempt, record for that.
Okay.
So I managed to do it under 18 hours. I was quite pleased. I was broken. Brilliant. After that.
When was that?
That was June last year.
Okay.
June or July? July last year.
Yeah.
I set off at 2 o'clock at night and just kept going, charging through. I remember that. Yeah, the heaviest part was the food again, because I had to carry all my food.
Okay.
So it's always like, if you're on your own, you need to take into consideration you carry a lot of food. I was not worried about water, because we live in the Highlands. We're quite lucky to get a river here and there, you know. But
and that must be a massive part of it for these massive, long, unsupported things,
mm-hmm.
which we'll get onto in more detail for your Cape Wrath Trail. Another thing I noticed on your Strava, you've got a list of a lot of your big achievements, as well as you're the first Polish person to do the big three.
Yes.
Ramsey's, Bob Graham, Paddy Buckley. The one I saw was the Great Glen Way, Fort William to Inverness.
Inverness to Fort William.
Okay, you did it that way.
Yeah, done it twice.
I saw that you had an unsupported time and a supported time. What was the
Supported one, because that was the first time I was actually trying to go for an FKT. The Great Glen Way supported was my first go at any FKT in my life. I was like, oh, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
So I was a bit nervous. I didn't know if I can do it. So my brother-in-law, Ryan, he took me to Inverness, and then he was just meeting me at certain towns just with a flask of water and some extra and gels for the next stage. And I had Marcus and Corina, and they were helping. They were cycling. Corina was cycling with me. Marcus was running with me just to pace me a little bit at the end. And that went quite well. Just the last part, the canal stretch was a bit painful.
right at the end.
Because it's so flat and you just need to just run. You don't have an excuse to slow down up the hill and walk, you know, you just need to run. And I finished that, and I was chuffed. I got the record. I think I took an hour and a half or 2 hours off the previous record. And I remember it got posted on social media, and there were some people actually claiming and saying that I didn't break the record.
Right.
Because the record is 10, it's actually 40 minutes faster or an hour faster what I did.
All right.
But that's the race.
Okay.
The race record, which starts and finishes in different places.
Okay.
I did the Great Glen Way, so that was clarified. Just okay, it's fine. But then I just had it, and I was thinking, this is unfinished business. I need to do it again. I'm going to show them. It's like, you know, it was more of a pride thing. It's like, oh, it's like, don't know. So I want to see now. I know the route now. I can go myself. I'm going to try it.
Okay.
And I went again, and I ran half an hour quicker.
And then this time it was totally
on my own,
unsupported.
Ryan took me to Inverness, and that was it. That's the end of it. I didn't see him until the finish. And I managed to take another half an hour off that.
Which is about, is it about 100, how far is it?
117 kilometres.
Kilometres, and it's 12 hours, 28, I think.
It was 11.38 hours.
Oh, right, sorry.
11.38, okay. I think it was okay. 11.28, 11.57, okay. I think it was the supported, okay. And then 11.28 was the unsupported.
Wow.
So I know, Marcus was actually saying that, because he was supporting me on the first one, that I think he thinks I ran faster because he wasn't talking to me. He always says he talks too much. I don't know. But I think it was more just focus on the running part and just eat, drink, run, don't get lost.
And you said your first ever attempt at an FKT was that
Great Glen.
Supported Great Glen. When was that? Just to get an idea.
February last year.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was end of February. And then I did the unsupported 3-4, just a month after that.
So all these that we've been talking about, and there's other things like the East Highland Way and the Road to the Isles, all that's been within the last year.
Yeah, it was it? All last year, wow. Yeah. I did all four of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Road to the Isles, I made it up just because it is Road to the Isles, you know, you just drive to the islands and it's Road to the Isles. It's mostly a road run.
Okay.
You need to be careful because it's really busy in the A83. So I done it once in 2016, and I remember finishing at Korpach shops, and that was me. I needed a taxi to town. But then the last year I was more prepared and was more into the long stuff, and I think I ran, I don't remember the time, it was 5 and a bit. Just over 5 hours it took me to run from Malek to the end of High Street.
In Fort William?
Fort William, Fort William.
That's amazing.
68 kilometres, just 5 hours and a bit, I think.
What was your route into running in general and the long stuff in particular?
Well, I wanted to lose weight and stop smoking. Okay. So that was my big drive. That's why I came to Scotland in the first place. I needed a change of scenery and I needed a change of life. I used to drink a lot and smoke, and that was not doing me very well. And I came here, started working, and I didn't know many people, so I just started running on my own, just trying to keep myself occupied, joined the club. Obviously, there's so many people in the club that are so motivate you to work hard. Ali Kennedy, he started shouting at me, he's like, come on, you can do this up there, you know, running up the hill. And I was like, why is this guy shouting at me? But I actually liked that. I needed someone to actually push me. And it stayed with me. And I just tried to, if I try to do something, I'm making sure I'm going to be prepared. I'm trying to just make the most out of my body, just trying to make the, you know, most of it and see what happens. And yeah, that was my journey. I tried to go a bit faster, like the 10Ks, 5Ks, but I got injured. I overdone it. It wasn't for me. So I had a torn muscle, so I was out from running for a year. And then I discovered I can actually go the distance. Slowly, I was like running longer and longer, and it felt good. I didn't have to focus too much on speed, but I had the speed from running with the club and just doing speed work with them. And it just stayed with me. Over the years, it just build up, and you need to have a strong mind as well. I listen a lot to audiobooks, motivation audiobooks, other people's stories and adventures, and it's really helpful.
So while you're on these long runs,
So there's always I got a second phone, especially for audiobooks, that sits in a pouch and it just plays along sometimes if I really need a help or I just need to hear a voice. Because you can get lost in your own mind sometimes.
Of course,
it can drive you mad, honestly. You can.
I'd imagine you spent longer running in the dark on your own than most runners.
Darkness is painful. Just on its own, it's just, you can't see anything, you can only see that little circle of light in front of you, and that's it.
So that's, for hours. Yeah, I'm thinking an audiobook or something like that is going to help focus the mind, usually. And I'm curious, just when you mentioned about getting shouted at to push on, had you been exposed to anything like that when you were younger, when you were growing up? Were you sort of doing sports?
No, really. I've never been a sport person. Okay. I played a bit of volleyball and football when I was in high school, and that was it. I never ran. I have to say, I hated running.
Okay.
I was absolutely against running. Doing two, three laps for a warm-up before a football game. No, I was standing on the side trying to avoid the PE teacher's looks, you know. total opposite.
Something just changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Can we come back then to the Cape Wrath Trail and get a bit more detail on that? So we sort of talked a little bit about what it is. It's this massive, huge trail. Looking at the map now and before you arrived, I was sort of, I've never done it, but I've been in a lot of those areas. And you're coming through some obviously it's pretty low level. It's within valleys and over some cols, but it's some incredibly rough terrain in there. You're around by Surlees, Bothies, pretty rough. The track out from Barrisdale out to Kinlochhoorn, that's a fantastic single track.
I was thinking when I actually recce'd from Fort William to Barrisdale Bay. That's the only area I knew.
Okay.
So that's I recce'd that. I went for a few runs. Just took the train to Glenfinnan and ran one way or the other. So I was quite lucky because living in Malig, I can run from Glenfinnan all the way to Inveree and take the boat back.
Yeah, of course.
And basically, I'm home. So it was actually nice. But at that point, when I was doing the reccees, I was thinking, the hardest part is the Noidert bit. But as I went on the actual Cape Wrath, I found sections that are way worse than Noidert.
Okay.
Noidert is actually really easy compared to what I've been through.
What sort of higher up in
hard section was when Falconridge. I was there at night and the wind was quite strong. It was raining and the boulders on that ridge are just massive. The path, there's lots of holes between the rocks. It's really hard to keep your balance. And
This is up at Glenshiel.
Glenshiel. Mm-hmm. I remember that was the first part that actually tested me. I was just thinking, this is going to be harder than I expected. Just to say before I go further, by the time I got to Barrisdale Bay, I wasn't feeling 100% about myself.
Okay.
I started feeling a bit really tired and sore, which was unexpected. I was 70 kilometers in. I was roughly around the Bothy in Barrisdale Bay.
And zooming out, that's within that the first, would be, maybe yeah, a fifth.
Right there,
maybe Barrisdale. A fifth of the way in, maybe?
One fifth, well, maybe one, maybe one sixth. Sixth.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I was 60 kilometers in, and I was already thinking that this might not happen. So
okay.
I started thinking I'm not going to do this because I feel too tired, too sore already.
Okay.
And I'm just at the... Yeah, I'm not even out of Noidert yet.
Okay.
So I just slowed down, had some food and continued just going through. Made a few navigation errors. Must happens at night sometimes. But for Falconridge.
Yeah.
Falconridge, that was... It was really wet. It was raining heavily at certain times. And I remember I was slipping and sliding. Once I got off the rocky bit, I was sliding on forward, face first, on my back down to the glen, just there.
I've done you a discredit by talking about being in valleys because the Falcon Ridge is up at over 600 meters.
That's the Falcon Ridge is the highest point of the whole Cape Wrath. So I was quite happy. It's at the first quarter of the. Of the trail,
yeah.
But it was so wet. I had ultra shoes with like little studs, but enough stud to just keep me going. But it was there was no grip whatsoever on mud and grass coming down the hill.
Okay.
I remember at 60 kilometers as well, that's the first time I took my running poles. I trained with them just for this challenge, but I took them out and I never put them away.
Okay.
I think if it wasn't for my running poles, I wouldn't make it, because they saved me many times. Coming off Falcon Ridge, I slipped so bad, I started sliding on the grass, and they stopped me. And I remember hitting a rock with my head. Thankfully, I had the head torch on, the hat on, and the stick blocked me a little bit. So it only was like a wee knock, and nothing bad happened. But it could be way worse if it wasn't for the sticks. The running poles.
This is
that was just the start in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night, and it's raining a bit, and
yeah.
Okay.
I knew where I am. I knew I was like Shield Bridge is next. It's like okay, I can get there, but it was that was the first actual real test of the terrain, and yeah, I just knew I need to get through the night. That was just a hard bit. Going further, then I got through Shield Bridge, all right, and it was actually nice climbing out of Morvich. It's further along after Shield Bridge, Morvich. You're climbing out to Falls of Baloch Falls. Where are they? There we go. Yeah. Falls of Glomach.
Yeah.
Glomach. So the climb was quite really gentle, and it was really nice. It was a proper maintained path, so I was really happy. Finally, the off-road stopped, and there was a proper path taking me up to the falls. That's where I saw mountain goats in the valley before I hit the actual falls. It was actually, okay. It was really nice to see them. It was like lots of them, baby goats and just adults everywhere. At least 28 to 30, just in a wee herd. Coming off that place, it was another one. It was like really steep. It was a proper gorge. It was like vertical walls. You followed a wee narrow path. You had to cling to wall, like to the rocks, just trying not to slip, because you could just see it. Well, you couldn't see the bottom. It was so deep. I was already tired. I was like, oh, please don't. That was a really slow section, just trying to keep myself going. But then I crossed the river and I was on the track. And that was the first time when I actually experienced sleepwalking.
Okay.
I was so tired after this section, Falcon Ridge and Falls of Glomach, those two bits, tired me out so much. Morvich. So I think it was somewhere here. Yeah, somewhere here.
How long had you been going at this point?
That was... Is there a... No, it doesn't show. I think it was... 30 hours maybe.
Wow.
It's close to 30 hours then. And I was walking on the track along the loch, one of the lochs there after the falls, and I fell asleep walking.
Really?
Yeah, it was a proper track, and I remember walking and I fell asleep, I think for a minute, and I kept walking. I didn't trip over, I didn't fall in the ditch. I woke up and actually I felt refreshed. I could actually feel that I had a, like my brain switched off, and yeah, I fell asleep walking, so that was unusual. At this point, the rain was still going quite strong. It was already day. I was trying to find a boffy to get myself just changed to put some dry clothes. I had two jackets on and two base layers, but they were already soaked through. I had another jacket in the bag, so I just wanted to find a dry place to change it, and I knew there are boffies about. I had them all like written down roughly a rough distance where they are, but the rain was so hard and I just couldn't get the distance right. I was thinking the boffie is going to be behind the next hill. But it wasn't, and I just kept going like that for at least 5 to 6 times, until finally I got to the top of a hill and I could see the boffy at the bottom, next to a loch. Loch Croshy, Locroche, and that was the Bofi Mobui.
Okay.
Mobui, that's the first Bofi. That was the only Bofi I used. Mobui. So.
And this is in really sort of remote terrain.
This is absolutely remote, yeah. There's nothing about.
Sorry, we're just looking at the map here. I'm wondering the best way to kind of put this into context. This is kind of round by Lurg Moor, isn't it? Where's Lurg Moor? Yeah, so you're just south of Lurg Moor. So, yeah.
And I remember I got to that Bofi and took everything off. I managed to put a GoPro out actually to film myself. I think I spent 7.5 minutes in that Bofi just trying to change up and everything. It was just the weather. Just the rain didn't stop until then. I was 33 hours maybe in, 32, 33 hours. And I was really feeling it. I was already, the sleep deprivation was kicking in and I was feeling really tired. So it was more of a power hike most of the time, not a run. I was running downhill, hard. It was already hard running on the flat. The feet were hurting at this point and I'm not even halfway yet, so.
Well, I think this is the thing, is you've already done an absolutely massive run. Mm-hmm. What was your longest time running before this?
23 and a half hours.
So you're already way
Ramsey
into
round. That was the longest I was on my feet, yeah.
So, yeah, you're already way over that.
Well, yeah, like almost 10 hours longer yeah, at that point. So that was the big one that I didn't know what to expect from my body because I'd never been past the 24 hours running mark. I was absolutely soaked. Feet were completely soaked from start. So I didn't change. I remember I only changed my jacket. I put a dry jacket on. The weather cleared up after that, thankfully. Once I got to the Bofi, I changed, put some dry clothes. You could see the clouds moving. It started getting brighter, and the clouds were basically slowly disappearing. And a few hours later, I had the sun out, and that was it. No more rain until the end.
Did it just get better and better?
Yeah, that was 33, 35 hours of non-stop rain. Not heavy, but it was just that constant rain that could make it, that made it all different, difficult. Rivers were higher up, so it was quite hard to cross some of them. So that's why the running poles actually help, because you can get your balance right between the slippery rocks.
Had you slept at all at this point?
No.
No?
No.
No.
The first time I slept, I'm just trying to think, where did I sleep? I had in total 4 naps. I slept 90 minutes in total.
Okay.
Yeah.
In what, 3.5 days?
3.5 days, 90 minutes.
That's incredible.
I think the first nap was here, just before Krieg.
Okay.
Where's Krieg? Karnak? No. Just before Krieg, I remember I was coming down off the hill. And it was a really beautiful forest here. It started really, it was really nice. And I walked through a gate and I felt, so the sun was out, it was blue skies, so it was really warm. I took all the wet stuff out of my bag that I had from the night and I just put it on me just to dry it out in the sun, and worked, absolutely worked. It was the best idea ever, just to, because it was all the weight was on my back. Okay. I had to carry all the unnecessary water, I was like, you know, in the saturated clothes. So they managed to evaporate. It was already, the bag was heavy and that was extra weight. And I remember crossing walking through a foresty gate and just felt really appealing to just sit down right at the gate, foresty gate. I set my alarm on my phone, 20 minutes nap. And I woke up after 15. It was a gust of wind that woke me up, and I just woke up in a panic. I was like, oh, I slept for 2 hours or something, you know, just I wasted so much time. And I actually looked, I still had 5 minutes left, but I just stood up and I felt brand new. 15 minutes nap was enough to get me going again. And I worked out later that a 15-20 minute nap was enough to refresh my brain for 10 to 14 hours of running.
Okay.
So that will come to that later, because it gets more exciting. So, How do you say Kinloch Hugh?
Yeah.
Kinloch Hugh. I call it the long straight, because on the map it looks like a straight line. it's a proper path. I didn't have any issues there. My mind was wandering away. I was tired. I was just trying to eat. It was nice. But by the time I got to Kinloch Hugh, the path started going all over the place.
Okay.
Through bushes and trees and rivers, and I wasted a lot of time there trying to, because you can't find the path, that just disappears again.
Okay.
And you're just in high grass, trying to navigate. It doesn't actually take you through the village, through Kinloch Hugh. You just go on the outskirts of it. You can see cars in the distance driving, but you're not going near them.
Okay.
And then finally, after, just before I left Kinloch Hugh, the path followed a little bit on the road. So I remember that now. Sorry, I think I was sleepwalking again.
And just to keep people with us, we're roughly halfway.
That's halfway.
You're just passing, you've passed through like the Coulin Forest, Coulin.
That's the forest.
You've got Torridon kind of on your west. And Kinloch Hugh, you're then just kind of going into...
Ben Aige.
Of Torridon's there on the left. And you're going up around Sleoch and kind of then into really kind of remote tracks of Wester Ross, past the back of stuff like Shanavray.
Yes, and I'm just thinking, coming out of Kinloch Hugh... This was actually all right here coming out. I was in the glens just following the paths. Had another nap, I think, on top of a ridge just near in... What's this place called?
Inverlail?
Inverlail, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I got to that point. Just before that, I was on top of a ridge. I got so tired. It was a nice path. It was actually a really nice road, but it was going really high up between the mountains. It was well maintained. And before I got to Inverlail, I stopped for a nap, and I was so tired. That's when my first hallucination started. I was climbing the hill. Yeah, I had quite a few hallucinations. The first one literally shook me, like, okay, this is happening, I am going to hallucinate here. I was so desperate to have a nap in a bofi, in a sheltered place, that I started seeing bofis on top of mountains, hills,
okay,
where they're not supposed to be, and they're not built there, like on a ridge. I was walking up, climbing a track, and I saw a bofi. I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is a beautiful bofi. I'm going straight to that. I'm going to have a nap. It was a boulder. And that happened 5 or 6 times on that in like maybe an hour. So that was just constant. My brain was telling me there are buildings around. There are people walking around from bofi to bofi. They're living there. But there was actually no one there. It was just the rocks, just the boulders that looked from a distance. It was already dark.
Okay.
Again, and just my head was playing tricks on me. I got to the highest point, and I got so tired, like, I can't keep going like this, and I literally found a bit of a flatter moss and a nicely shaped rock, and I just dropped. I just lied down, set my alarm on my phone, lied down 20 minutes, and I woke up absolutely stiff and frozen.
Oh.
I was in the middle, it was on top of, I think it was 500 meters up above sea level. On top of like a wee pass, like a...
Did you, I'm loving this, talking through the whole route, but just as an aside here, maybe we could ask you about the kit you had, because it doesn't sound like you had, well, you probably couldn't afford the weight of any sleeping stuff or anything.
No, I didn't. Well, I had an emergency bivy bag.
Okay.
I had one of those, and I had, I have like a foil blanket as well, just to keep myself warm. I had all the safety stuff, like first aid kits. I had the trackers. I had safety beacons. Like I said, first aid was there. Just the minimum. I just literally had the minimum just to save weight. Most of my kit was on me, and my bag only was carrying food and just the emergency stuff, like a baby bag and the first aid kit.
It must have been quite a weight of food you had.
I had a lot of food before, but I did some calculations and I narrowed down to around 4,000 calories per day.
Okay.
So that was close to 4 kilo food. Four kilos, that would be 20 pounds.
Okay.
21 pounds of food for 4 days of running.
Okay.
And by the time I finished, I still had like 3 pounds of food left.
Okay.
I ate less than 3,000 calories a day on average.
Really?
Yes, I had like 3,500 to 4,000 calories per day, where I was actually eating less than 3,000 calories per day. And feeling really good. Really good, yeah. So usually gels and nut butters.
Okay.
Yeah, nut butters. Like survival food.
Yeah.
It was actually tasty. Almonds and peanuts.
And did you... what was your approach? Did you resupply at all? Like with anything from shops?
No, because it's an unsupported attempt. You're not allowed to have drop bags or...
Okay.
Well, they say you can use facilities like toilets and stuff.
Okay.
But I wasn't actually that sure about going to shops and because that's already counts as a self-supported because you self-support yourself from a shop, you know. There's no one there, but you go and buy it. You didn't carry it.
So you sounds like you were very pure on this. You set off with
what
everything
I had. It was with me, and there was no chance of changing it. If I would change anything, that would be me just changing the whole attempt. So it was stuck with me. It's like
that's incredible
to just strive, like live on what I have.
Yeah. Because you also. You beat the previous record, the supported record by 9 hours.
That was my plan B. If it happens, it'll be great. But I just wanted to be the first one to finish an unsupported attempt to just record it, just to have it done. You know, just to be the first one again. Hey, you know, great stuff. But maybe if I manage to get this supported the record broken, you know, it was like an idea on the side, and it happened. Well, chuffed with that.
So would you say that? Yeah, that was definitely a goal going into it, but not the only goal.
Not the only. No, I had two goals there. I was like, let's see how it goes.
And one thing you said earlier was about just challenging yourself, pushing yourself, seeing what happens. And I think if we maybe let you take us back to when you it certainly sounds like you were doing this, the hallucinations, and take you back to where you left off, you were kind of waking up frozen.
Oh yes, Inverleo. That was just before I got to Inverleo. I woke up super stiff. My right leg was gone. Like I just the whole hip to my knee was just so stiff, and I couldn't move for a second. I stood up and started walking downhill, and it was super steep. I managed to get to Inverleo, and I was looking for a boffy. Then I was looking for a boffy. I felt great, and I found a building that looked like a boffy. But it wasn't.
Oh.
I opened it. It was lights on. I was like, oh, there may be someone sleeping in there. But it looked like a boffy. There wasn't no MBA signs on it. So I was like, I'll just knock and open the door and just check. And I opened the door and it was actually like a hunter's lodge.
Okay.
It was like carcasses of deer hanging off the off the roof and all the stuff, all the equipment you need to process a deer make venison, and I got the fright of my life. I was like, this is not a hallucination. This is a butcher's house. I shut the door and I ran away. I remember that. That was terrifying. It was like in the middle of the night, there was no one there. There was no one. And they opened the door and there's like a dead deer hanging off, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Not what you expected.
No, I wasn't expecting that. No, it was, yeah, yeah. from there, it was hallucinations would come in and go in again, come in and go in. I'm just trying, because they got quite severe, like intense at some point. Maybe I can talk about them because I'm kind of proud of them. I had them because, in a way, not because it happened to me, but it has to be I need to talk about it because it is dangerous. Running for 3.5 days on 90 minutes of sleep, it is dangerous. You're putting yourself at risk. So it's like... So Inverleil, then just trying to think. After I freshened up, I was feeling great for another 12 hours. I remember walking around here. The night finished, and I was walking for a long time next to a loch. Lochandheim. It was a really nice path as well. It was well maintained. I was so tired, I stopped at that point. The sun was out, it was really warm. That's the first time I took my shoes off to actually have a look, because my feet were hurting really bad. I knew there are blisters and they're completely scratched up and everything. And so I had a spare pair of socks, so I changed them up, put some plasters on, just talcum powder, then just kept going. That's the first time I was actually crying. At that point, I started crying, thinking what I'm doing to myself. Why I'm doing this? And then I was actually shouting at my dad. I was so tired, I was shouting at my dad. It's like, I hope you're watching me. It's like, you see what I'm doing? I was so tired. But actually, it felt great. It felt good. I shouted it out. I mean, I was so angry at the same time. I was like, why is this hurting so much? I knew it's going to hurt, but I wasn't expecting it to be that bad. But
I'm trying to put this in context, because you've been going for, like, I don't know, maybe this, like 50 hours or something. You've only had about less than an hour sleep.
Less than an hour.
Yeah. You've been through two nights, more than. Mm-hmm.
That's two nights.
Two
nights done.
And unsurprising that you're hurting at this point, I think.
It felt good.
How did you turn that around? How did you get back going after that?
I started walking, just walking and eating, and just audiobook. It went out. I pressed play again and started thinking and talking to myself, and I knew I'm past the halfway point. It's like the only way now is home. Like I'm on the home stretch. I know it's just halfway, and I'm already feeling absolutely broken. I know that, but that was a bit disheartening. Like, thinking is like, oh, I'm feeling so broken, and it's only halfway. And I have to do the same distance again, on already hurting body. But I knew I'm getting closer. And I had the trackers on me, and I knew people are watching me as well. So it was an extra motivation. I was like, I'm not going to be weak. I'm going to show them I can do this. I was trying everything I can that I had in my arsenal just to motivate myself. You know, just like, you can do this. You can do this. You know, it hurts, but...
Have you found the tracker quite useful for that in the past? Like, because you know people are sort of watching.
That was the first time. Was the first time. I usually have the tracker just for safety reasons, so you can see where I am, just so my family can see where I am. And I'm not allowed in the hills without the tracker, just like a wee beacon, you know, satellite, just for safety. But I'm usually on my own, so it actually makes sense to have something. I was actually, this was good. I'm thinking, that was the early morning when I was screaming, shouting my dad and just trying to get through this. Glenn Oikle, I don't actually remember this part.
It
was a long way, and I remember the next bit.
You're coming to Athens now, aren't you?
This is the best part. This was the actual... Inshnadamf, what do you call it?
Inshnadamf.
from Inchnadan all the way to what is it, Lochstack Lodge? Possibly there. That was the worst part, the hardest part for me.
Okay, so this is past that was Conneval, Ben Morasent.
Ben Morasent. Yes, yeah. It was a good. Actually, Ben Morasent was a good climb.
Okay.
It was a nice, it was a steep climb, but it was a road, so I was happy there's a path to follow. But then it disappears and it takes you through higher grounds, which is basically boglands. As you can see, a quad track, but it just sinks you in. You lose so much energy trying to go through it. There was no chance of running. And then the downhill, I got some like energy in me just to get down to the valley, to the glen. And I was just flying downhill. I remember just looking at my map. I was like, this takes me around. Like, it adds distance. I'm just going to go straight in a straight line. And I remember I was running and tripping over it because the grass was so high. It was the tussocks was everywhere. I got to the river and felt really weird because it felt like I've been there before. It's like, it felt like I'm home.
Okay.
That possibly was another of my hallucinations, that I felt home. It's like, I know this place. I'm not far. I'm like somewhere in Glen Nevis. Like, you know, I'm home. Well, actually, I was like 250 kilometers away from home. This part was super hard because there was no path and the high grass following the river. You had to follow a river for 10 kilometers and it was just the longest time, like trying to run while you couldn't run. And the sun was out. I was absolutely boiling at that point. As I was wishing again the cloud would came or something, okay. You know, just to change a little bit. But I got through that. Seen many antlers, and I was like, oh, I would take this antler home and hang it above my fireplace. But like, I'm not carrying an antler for 100 kilometers.
I'm glad. I was worried there you were going to tell me about how many antlers you then carried as well.
I saw about 6 antlers. Or 5 or something, but I was like, just walking past them, I was like, oh, it was just like hurting me inside. It's like, I would take that, you know. And when I was on the height, like on the level of with Olapol. No, Olapol? Yeah, I think so. Oh, sorry, I went too high up. That was before that. Here, this area, I skipped a bit.
So yeah, for people, this is the area kind of just inland from Kyleskew Bridge, isn't it?
Yes.
So you've got a lot of Glencool and
so this
Glendou.
Area here, Glasbane, these hills here. This was the hardest section from coming down. It was still night. Sorry, I skipped this bit. That was my mistake. I had a really bad hallucination coming down here.
Okay.
I had a hallucination that there was a group of forestry workers working on the conservation of wildcats in the area. And they were walking on the zigzag paths, asking people, runners like me as well, because they met me, to actually look out for wildcats and test the path they just maintained. And at the bottom there will be another forester that's going to ask me a few questions. How did I like it? Did I see many wildcats on the way down?
Wow.
And they said there's a nice road, there's a nice path following the river all the way to the Boffy. And nothing like that happened. But I actually saw people. I was talking to people. I was shouting to people.
Wow.
And there was no one there. That was the worst hallucination I had. I was shouting at them. You're too high. You're too low. You should be on the path here. The wildcats, you're going to scare the wildcats. And yeah, finally I got off that. It shook me really bad. It was just like, this is bad, this is bad, this is really bad. I was repeating it in my head, this is bad, I need to be careful here. Night finished, there was a beautiful Boffy here. Glendou, I think it's Boffy called, one of them, one of the big ones. And that's the first time I actually felt like I'm amongst the people that lived there.
Okay.
There was a big buff. It looked like a church building. It was beautiful. I know it's there because I seen photos of it on Google. I checked. It was there. And I actually saw people walking up and down the path, like from a distance. Just going to say it, there was no one there, but I saw them. It's just, yeah, one of the hallucinations. Then trying to cross further on, I climbed out of the glen, and I was climbing over the hill to the other side, to the next boffy, and one of my work colleagues appeared on the path. Yeah. He was helping to, like an old drover's path, like people sometimes, you know, transport people or cattle, or, you know, cattle from one side to the other, just over a hill. So they're like, he was like supporting people, travelers, to get across over a hill, like in a carriage or something, or, you know, guiding them. And I saw him. He said to wait 5 minutes. I sat down for 5 minutes. He disappeared. And after 5 minutes, I was like, he left me. And he wasn't there. So that was my hallucination. And I saw my work colleague. That was...
You're definitely getting your fair share of the adventure you're looking for.
And I got down to the sea level. I fell asleep between some rocks on the seashore. And then I saw my wife and the kids. And now I felt great again. That was that. And I think that was the last of the hallucinations. It didn't come back because I had a proper nap in like 20...
Okay.
Over 20 minutes, I think it was. That was the last proper nap I had. Yeah. That was 70. I think it was close to 70 hours.
70 hours in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and there was that's when the last day started.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah, going sort of after Lockstack, you're sort of really into the last section, mm-hmm. aren't you?
That was the before the last day. The last night was super bad with hallucinations. I had like three hallucinations, really bad hallucinations in 5 hours. That could really put me in danger, but thankfully I managed to control them in a way.
How was the last day? What was that like?
The last day was actually, I think the adrenaline kicked in because I knew where I am, and I was sore. I was beyond sore. I was like, I couldn't feel anything anymore. My feet were just gone. It felt like an all big, like the whole foot is scratched. Just the whole, from the calf down, both legs felt like they are just gone. Like there's just no skin left. That's how they felt. Every single time I put my foot in a bit of in a puddle, it just went through me like a needle. Just the pain. I knew it's bad, but I knew I can't take my shoes off because I'm not going to put them back on. They were swollen, sore. Yeah.
Did you ever think about stopping at this point?
No.
No,
because I know I'm so close.
Yeah,
I was already. I was at the pole. I was like, there's no chance I'm stopping unless I really like drop, and that'll be it. Like, not drop dead, you know, but just like, nah. I spoke about the Ben Moore ass, and that was the hardest part of that section with the grass we are up here. Yeah, I forgot about that. Was the Alapole area.
And north of Lockstack.
Yeah, Lockstack. I found my wife standing in front of Lockstack.
Okay.
It was actually really nice. I was like, Ashley, I am almost home. It was quite windy, but it was nice. And I remember standing there just looking. I couldn't see the lighthouse because it's still, I could see the edge of Scotland. It was like, actually, yes, I can see the end of my journey. It was amazing. But I still knew I have a long way to go. Getting through this part was hard because it was just, there's no paths. You just follow a line. You just get a bearing and just try to make it as easy as possible, which doesn't work because there's holes everywhere, high grass everywhere, you know, just run when you can, walk when you can, you know, just make it work. just I couldn't run anymore because I was so sore. But when I got to one of the last lodges, I hit the main road, I saw cars. Actually, I felt it's nice. I can see I am near some, that was right there, Lochstack Lodge, just below, past Beanstack, was it? Beanstack, yeah. So I stopped there for 5 minutes, readjusted a few things. It was really warm. I took some layers off, got some extra food in me, just doubled everything up just to fuel myself up. And I started walking and then turned into running again. And I actually put this section from the lodge all the way to Rikonik.
Okay.
That was one of the best sections I had. It was still hard because obviously halfway through the path disappeared and you were just on the side of a loch, just making your way through mud. But this was good. That was the, I remember there was a police station there. I had to duck under a wee, like a car park log. It was just like an edge of a car park. It was like a big log. And I tried to go under it and I flattened myself. I couldn't stand up. Right in front of the police station. Thankfully, there was no one there. I stood up and just kept walking. It was a long climb back to Badkol. That was the last village I was in.
That's where you leave the road just near. You leave the road. Kinlochbervie, yeah, to come into your final part.
Yeah, I decided to go straight up from Badkol.
Okay.
And just kept going all the way, following just a line. My goal was here just to make it before dark.
Sure.
I couldn't face another night.
Yeah.
And I was really desperate. The adrenaline kicked in and I didn't sleep from that last hallucinations from the beach, like when I fell asleep there at Aleppo. From Aleppo to the finish line, I didn't sleep at all.
Okay.
I just pushed. It is the last 140 kilometers, something like that. Almost 100 miles, close to that. I just didn't. This is enough. So I need to finish before the night hits again, because my brain is not going to take it.
And this, where we're talking about, you maybe got views towards Sandwood Bay.
I managed to see the stack at some point.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
okay.
From a distance, it was there. I could see Sandwood Bay. I had one glimpse of it. Yeah.
And I think, what's the terrain like this final bit up to actually Cape Wrath?
It is actually not bad. Well, the first half is high grass holes and a bit boggy.
Okay.
But then it changes a bit. It flattens out and it's actually really runnable. And you can run uphill, flat or downhill. There was a few bofies I saw, and that was the last time I saw a human in a bofie. I actually ran to him. There was a guy with his wife, just started the Cape Wrath, but okay, from the lighthouse. And I stopped. Because I kept
looking. The real person.
It was a real person that was standing there. And he was like asking, what are you up to? And I remember I didn't want to say too much. Well, I'm just about to finish. Just didn't want, because they're starting.
Yeah,
I didn't want to be, didn't want to say anything wrong because I was super tired. And I was like, I'm just going to finish my Cape Wrath now. I was like, how far is it to the lighthouse? He's like, another 8 to 9 kilometers. And I remembered looking at him. He's like, I just checked my maps a few hours ago and it said I have 10 kilometers to go, and he's telling me I have another 10. And that really knocked my confidence. I was like, oh, I need to get. I went further along again and I stopped, took the maps out, and did some measurements again, and it's like, okay, I got. And I knew exactly I have now 8 kilometers to go.
Okay.
So I made a wee mistake earlier on, but it was fine. I was on the right line, I just had the wrong distance in my head.
Okay.
I thought it's a bit closer.
Yeah.
And then the reality is a bit, it's like it was double the distance still to go. And it got dark. It was really like I was pushing. I was really charging up the hill. I was just pushing. It was adrenaline. It was like I wasn't eating much. I was just trying to get it done before the darkness hits. I got to the military grounds. I knew they're not shooting, so I was allowed to go through them. But I was still a bit worried when it got dark. It got dark. I didn't make it in time before the sunset.
Okay.
And I remember seeing flat stones. The ground was okay to just run, but it was flat stones and they looked like landmines. And my head was just like, oh, I don't want to get blown up here. Just 5 kilometers before the lighthouse. I'm on the military grounds here. I remember I stopped and I was looking at one rock and I was actually testing it with my food. Because it looked, it was perfectly round. It was just a flat rock on the grass. I was so tired and just desperate. It's like, I want to finish. 2 kilometers before the finish, I got lost. I couldn't find the road to the lighthouse, the military road to the lighthouse. Couldn't find it. You can't really see the lighthouse from mainland. Okay. It is hidden on the cliffs, but the mountains around it, they just stop any sort of lights. You can only see a wee reflection if there's a cloud above it. I saw the reflection a few times, but then it disappeared, so I roughly knew which way to go. Finally, when I just stopped, because my wife was telling me, what happened to you at the end? Because you went all over the place. I was like, that's when I got lost. I was going, I did a wee, almost a circle. I was going right, I was going left. I was trying to find the river. Okay. River that was leading to the road. And I couldn't find it.
And you're so close.
I was so close, and I was getting so, like, you know, it's like, just itching to finish. It's like, I'm so close here. And finally, I found a river, and I decided just to follow this river. I'm not going to look at any other stuff. Like, this is the river that's going to take me down to the road. And finally, I seen it. It was like a steep climb. I was like, oh no, and the climb. And it's like, that's a bit different. It looks man-made.
Okay.
I remember crawling on top. I just crawled all the way, you know, with my just all four. And I stuck my head over the edge and I could see the tracks. And I started crying again. I just lied there. I was lying flat on the ground, like in the mud. I was just lying there. I was like, I am almost home. Yeah, I stood up. And at this point, I just couldn't run anymore. It hurt so bad. I was like, you know, groaning and just coughing. And I just, every single step was so sore. I was basically, I was running with tears in my eyes because it was so painful. And just before the finish, I could see, it was my friends, Brad and two Kevins, they were there. One of them went out like 50 meters ahead with a head torch, started flashing it at me, and he just jogged the last 50 meters with me, but I was just in bits. I remember just touching that gate, just pressing that stop button on the watch. yeah, it feels like I'm there again. That was, yeah, painful experience. I enjoyed it, but it was something I will never forget.
Yes, what a story. What time is this when you finished?
That roughly? Was 10 to 11 at night.
Okay, so it's dark.
On Saturday, and I set off on Wednesday morning.
Tell us a bit more about what you, when you touched that gate and when you finished, what could you think at all, or were you just instantly asleep?
I didn't fall asleep. I was so, the adrenaline was just in my blood, just flowing, just constantly just giving me energy, and I felt really good. I was in tears. I didn't know what to feel. I was so sore. My feet were so sore. I couldn't actually focus on anything else. And it was nice to just get my friends, you know, together and just actually see, touch a real human, you know. It's like, yes. Here we go, handshake and a big cuddle, you know. Like, oh, it felt great. And then I could only hear, you've done it, you've done it. Pavel, you've done it. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I've done it. Then we started chatting away, but my temperature dropped down. And I started shivering. It was just, if I would stay there longer, it would be a hypothermia thing. So we got Angie and her dad, that live at the lighthouse, they invited us in to the bunkhouse, and they gave us food and drink and everything. So I took my shoes off with a nice hot salt bath, but it was just so sore.
Did you sleep there that night?
4 hours maybe.
Yeah.
Couldn't sleep, it was so sore. Yeah. The leg was already stiffening up, the right foot, just above the ankle. That's when I got my infection, I found out later.
Yeah, so even then, the journey back from there must have been pretty difficult.
It was. We couldn't get across to... what's the name of the village? I forgot the name of the village. The last village here. The village is called...
It's Durness, isn't it?
Durness. To Durness. Yeah. We couldn't get over to Durness. The wind was southeast. Southeasterly winds. The big ferry was out for maintenance, so they only had like a small dinghy.
Okay.
But the other side of the shore was just getting hit with the waves so bad that they were struggling to get us across because of that.
Wow.
So we had a bus. We had a bus from the lighthouse all the way to the ferry crossing. But then we spent another hour and a half, 2 hours just waiting for the actual ferry to get us because they struggled. We got across, yeah. But I was using my walking poles to keep myself straight.
And then, like you've said at the start, double fish and chips
in Ullapool. Yeah.
But you, by that point, couldn't really walk.
I didn't know it was that bad. I walked across. I like hobbled, but my right leg was already stiff. I couldn't move my ankle. But okay. I didn't manage to walk. I was just sore. I just took some painkillers and just kept going. But then on the way out of the fish and chip shop, holding the two boxes, I realized this is really bad because I had to stop in the middle of the road and a car almost ran me over. I started waving them. Wait a second, I'm moving. It really took me a while to cross the road. And by the time we got to Fort William, to A&E, I was planning to go to A&E anyway to just get my feet checked because I knew they're going to be in horrible condition. But so I needed a wheelchair.
Okay.
Yeah, by the time I got to I shouted, but I was like, "You need to get a wheelchair, mate. I can't walk."
I'm wondering, we didn't talk a huge amount about, it sounds like the fueling went okay.
Yes.
But I'm wondering, when you got to hospital, were you dehydrated or do you think you'd manage that side of things?
Oh, I managed well. I was drinking water from rivers non-stop, mixing it with porridge, mixing it with electrolytes, anything, just that could be liquidized, even like nut butters. Okay. Squeezing them in the water, shaking them up and drinking them. You're like, you know, it actually worked really well just to have a bit of taste in the water. So,
at this point, you must have been in an absolutely massive calorie deficit.
Yes, I think I was over 20,000 calories in deficit. 20,000, just over 20,000.
Wow.
I think the estimate calorie burn was 33,000, just like more or less, 33. I ate less than 10. 9.7 thousand calories I ate.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was all like fatty ones, like mostly fatty foods from nut butters. So they're really calorific. So they give you actually a good bit of energy and protein, what your muscles need. I didn't cramp at all, so I think I had enough of everything in me.
And stomach issues, you haven't mentioned that?
No. I only had one stomach issue because I had two hot meals. I was carrying my cooking equipment as well, so I had that.
Oh, you were?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah, I had a wee stove. A chicken tikka masala I had, but I didn't put enough water in it, so it was kind of more pasty.
Oh, okay.
And it was too spicy, and I only ate half of it, the other half later, but it actually, I felt it after like 50 hours of running, and I had that spicy food in my stomach. It actually burned me a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a bit, I had a bit of discomfort for 5 hours. Yeah.
All the distances and all the times, you know, time scales are so long.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a real bad patch for 10 hours or more.
Yeah,
but
it was
still
a
small
risky
part of the.
Mm-hmm.
Still a small part of your overall. It's 86 hours. I have to say, you're arriving here today. You're walking well.
Yeah. I'm really good. Yeah, I'm feeling great. Yeah, foot is healing, so antibiotics are working. I'm well, yeah.
How are you? Yeah, I mean, this is, it goes without saying, but it needs to be said, it's an absolutely incredible endurance achievement. How do you feel about it looking back now?
I think it's still, it's not, like, I feel great. I've done it. I am absolutely chuffed with it. But it's not. It doesn't. I don't know how to say it. I can't find a word for it. I'm really proud of it. That's what I'm going to say. I'm really proud of it. I think I'm more surprised that I actually finished it. It's more of a surprise to me, and I still am in a bit disbelief that I actually done it. Because the farthest I ran before that was less than 100 miles, like 95 miles, and then I done almost triple the distance. Mm. Yeah, and I remember speaking to someone before that. It's like, I wonder how far my body can go. I wonder how far can I take my body to, well, what's my limit? And someone says, oh, I don't think you will ever find out. Like, well, I'm going to try to find out. And yeah. This proved me that actually I can go quite far.
Yeah, and how close to your limit do you think you've pushed?
At the minute, this was my limit. I think so. I don't know, maybe there was a bit extra I would still push, because there would be I was slowing down and feeling different, because I knew the distance and I knew where's the finish. I can't really say it. I can't really judge it. It would be a different... Yeah. Every single challenge has its own difficulties, and the preparation has to be different. And like for this, you can't really prepare yourself for this. Like you can't train for. You can train as much as you can, only to minimize the final damage. That's what I say.
Yeah.
We can make the most out of everything. You know, run 100 km, 100 miles a week. Just keep going, climb, go through bogs, but it's still going to test your limits. Yeah.
It's an amazing story, Pavel. Thanks so much for telling us about that. I really enjoyed looking at that, looking at the map, hearing about these really the mind over body, you know, the hallucinations and how you got through that. Yeah. I can't believe you had so little sleep. That's absolutely incredible.
90 minutes.
I'm glad that you're recovering.
Yeah, the sleep was okay. I think I was a bit of a caffeine overdose over in those few days there.
Okay.
Just caffeine tablets and just keep going. Yeah. The part in the hospital was kind of hard, because from being on so much caffeine for the past days, suddenly I got to 3 cups of coffee a day in the hospital.
Okay.
I think it was a caffeine withdrawal syndrome there. I was shaking.
Okay.
It wasn't too bad. Doesn't do well. I feel great. Just couldn't sleep.
And what are you most looking forward to over the next few months?
First, recovery. I need to recover. Getting my garden in order, sorting my garden. just slowly starting up some training again. Just getting back to. Got some plans, like the West Highland Way race, race across Scotland in August.
Okay.
So I'm doing that, yeah. See how that goes. Maybe, yeah.
I'm glad you're having some recovery, some garden time.
Yeah.
First.
It'll be at least a month until I start doing anything. Just I need to make sure this is healed properly.
Great. Thanks again. Cheers. This is the end of episode 27 with Pavel. This has been fantastic, and see you next time.
Yeah, it's really great. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks.
Thank you.